think about going into something from a service mentality. People want to be the leader, and the leader is great, but with the leader comes great responsibility. And with the servant and the service mentality, you're able to learn so that when your time comes to get to X space, you have not only the trust of the person that you were working with and serving, but also the peers and everyone around you, but you also have the knowledge.
Tap into the minds of change makers creating real impact on people and our planet. It's time to live your purpose. I'm your host, Dale Wilkinson, and this is Good Makers. Hey, thanks for showing up. Welcome to episode 15. If you're new here, thanks for dropping by. Hit subscribe to get notified each week when a new episode is released. And if you're a regular, I would be so appreciative if you left a rating and review and share this podcast with any friends you think are also down to do some good and create a career of purpose. If you are looking for some inspiration to take charge of your life, you're gonna love this episode. I speak with Sean Finney, who went from living in his car for 4 months when he first arrived in Los Angeles to helping diversify the membership base of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences as Associate Director of Member Relations and Outreach. We talk about the opportunity Sean was able to carve out for himself when the Academy faced the Oscars so white backlash, and his advice on how you can do that within your own organization. He also talks about the importance of coming from a position of service and how doing so will allow you to get what you want done and earn respect and power at the same time. And Sean has advice for those who have ideas but are struggling to find an outlet for them. Here's my chat with your new best friend, Sean Finney. Sean Finney, the man, the myth, the legend. Welcome to the show. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here, and I'm also a little nervous.
What are you nervous about?
Because I'm usually you, like talking to people. And then so I'm kind of like, oh, I'm being talked to. So I'm like, okay, I'm here. However you need me.
That's surprising because, and we'll talk about it. You are a prominent voice in your own space and what you've been doing. So I'm surprised to say that you're nervous, but we'll touch on that because you're a multi-hyphenated talent. You are a speaker, you're an artist. And also, which I want to start with, is you are working with the Academy of the Motion Pictures and Arts and Sciences.
Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, yes.
And you're the Associate Director of Member Relations and Outreach. And you've been working with the Academy, we're just going to shorthand it and call them the Academy, for 9 years now?
Yeah, about 7 years, I think.
Got it. How did you get into that position? What were you doing beforehand, and how did you transition into the Academy?
Man, how long do we have for this podcast? The shorter version, I would say, is I was just doing music, singing and songwriting. That was my passion. That's all I was doing. That's all I was interested in doing. Since I was probably about 15 or 16, making my own music, working with different producers. I had been on MTV, VH1, BET, been on a tour, been on everything, did everything. I was in New York, and that was home, and that was base. I've moved around a little bit because I'm a military kid. And I was kind of like, I'm so New York, I'm never moving to LA. You know, I'm like, I'm not going to move to LA. Then ended up moving to LA. And I would come out to LA for Grammy Week every year. And something just lined up where I was like, you know what? I'm going to actually take that chance. I'm going to go. I came to LA and had no idea of what was going to happen at all. I remember the day that I drove here from New York to LA. The day that I got here, what I considered was an omen. I'm like, everything's going to be fine. I did a big interview with a major publication, and it came out that exact day, literally when I was driving into LA. So I was like, this is it. The stars are going to align. Everything's going to open. Yeah. Within 3 months of me being in LA and networking, I got offered a record deal. And I was like, this is it. I mean, because as an artist and as a musician, all you want to do is hear your music blasting in like the grocery store or the gym or wherever, the radio station, you know?
How old were you then?
I was 25, 26. Yeah.
which like stars in your eyes. This is a lot of people that would come to Los Angeles at that time wanting everything that what it seems like you're about to get.
Yeah. And it was so interesting too, Dale, because I feel like that was such a different transitional time in the industry as a whole. So at that time I had already, it's kind of normalized now for artists to kind of have their own music videos, have their own teams, have their own. But I was doing that kind of when it was like, you're an independent artist and you're able to make music videos and you're on MTV and you're on VH1 and you don't have a big support system behind you. I just would hustle my way. And so when I got here within 3 months, I was like, of course I'm going to take this deal. So how it works contractually is that you're still working on the project that they're interested in partnering with you with. And on the other side, they're working on negotiations. So I had a family attorney talking to that attorney for that said record label. And I was like, this is great. The producer and I are working on content. And it got to a point where it was no longer our attorneys talking. It was us talking because my attorney was telling me, well, they want full creative control. And I've always understood, Dale, at a very young age, imagery, right? And I always thought that I never wanted to participate in an image that I don't actually believe. And so I didn't want to be a puppet. I didn't want to be someone who is, you are the heartthrob, or you're the bad boy. And that's not actually right. Who I actually am, because I understand that there is somebody else, a young man or woman, who's going to be singing these lyrics. And what do those lyrics actually say? And do I stand behind them? If I stand behind them, I'm good. But I was very much about the creative control part, about not just relinquishing that, because I never wanted to be a shell of a human. I always understood very easy the idea of imagery. Fast forward, it got to a point where we just weren't seeing eye to eye. And I remember I went into the studio and they're like, you're either going to do this or you're not. We're taking the deal off the table. And I was like, I'm not doing it. And I remember leaving that day, Dale, kind of just being like, on one hand, very empowered, like, yeah, I'm walking away from this. I'm not going to do this. And on the other hand, like, what are you doing? You have given your entire life to get to this point where somebody cares enough to give you a deal or to want to talk about really partnering with you, and you're saying no. And I didn't understand at that very moment why the no was so loud, because it was loud. It was like a no, walk away. You can leave now. No.
From yourself.
From myself internally. And on the outside, I was like, you're stupid. Just take it. Be a puppet. It'll only last a couple of years, you know, and then you right. can get creative control. I ended up leaving that, literally that I had driven to New York with somebody. So my car was being shipped the very next day. Once my car got shipped the very next day, the person I was paying rent to wasn't paying rent with the money that I was giving them. And so then I started living in my then 1998 Toyota Camry. And again, I'm a military kid. My story is not a story of struggling like financially per se. My story of struggling was always just with my insecurity or my value within myself. But I've had a great home foundation. My mother and father are still together. I've been given so much love. It was just the love that I didn't really feel for myself. So I'm not used to living in my car. So I'm in LA just kind of like, what is happening? No friends, no real family here. And was like, all right, because I'm an artist, I've always had very odd end jobs. Ended up going to a temp agency. And I was an assistant before to a editor-in-chief of a pretty big publication at the time. And I went in and I was like, here's my resume. Here's what I can do. They're like, we got it. Based on your skill, we know who you can work with. And so for 3 weeks, which felt like 3 months, I'm in my car going back and forth with this temp company. And as you know about being an assistant, if I'm an assistant to Oprah, that's very different than being an assistant to Beyonce, different than being an assistant to the president, right? And so you can only speak to specific things. They had 200 resumes. They picked four. I was one of the four. Then the day of, it's kind of like a big drum roll where they're like, okay, are you ready to know what this is? And I'm like, I'm ready. And they were like, all right, because they positioned you to work with this woman. She's a visionary. And I'm like, it's Oprah. Because in my mind, I'm just like, it has to be Oprah. Who else? And they were like, it's for the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts and Sciences. And I'm like, what is that?
Wow.
What is that? What does that mean? And like for the CEO, and I was like, I should be happy, but I'm unclear what this means. Then I go in and figure out, oh, wow, this is what it is. This is crazy.
Yeah.
I go in. Yeah, it's the Oscars. This is crazy. There were two other assistants at the time. I was to be the third, interviewed with them and got the job, started the next day. I had been putting out applications everywhere. Dale, I went to 7-Eleven and I was like, I can work here. I would be the best slippery maker ever. And they were like, we're not hiring. And I'm like, I'm like, fuck, if 7-Eleven doesn't want you, you know what I mean? Like, no one wants you. So my first day, I'm sitting there, I'm at this desk, and mind you, I'm still living in my car, right? So I got dressed that morning at the gym.
Did they know that?
No, they didn't know that. No one knew that. No, right. I like lied and gave them some other address because I was just like, I can't tell them I'm living in my car. I'm a temp, right? So like the idea of like the temp idea is like you mess up the coffee wrong and like you could be gone in a second, you know? And so I'm there and I'm at the desk and I get a phone call on my cell phone. I step away and I had put out, I told you I put out resumes everywhere. Also, I put out a resume to work at a record label because why? I know music, that's easy. And they were like, we want to offer you the job. And at that time it was full time. This is the same day. So I'm at my temp job and I get a call about a full-time position at the world that I know, you know, all of that kind of great stuff. And it was for the president of the label. And so I was like, wow, this is interesting. So what did I do? What I always do, I immediately called my brother and I was like, CJ, what should I do? And you know, we talked through it. I had about like 5 minutes and he was like, you know that world. You know what that is. And at that time, he didn't know that I was living in my car. No one knew. My best friend knew, and that was it. Because I have real parents. Like, they would come and get me, you know? Right. And so he was just like, you know that world. You know what that's like. Do this. It's different. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm a temp. And I was trying to express, like, my anxiety around, but I'm a temp. I couldn't really go into why I'm so bothered that I'm a temp and I could be let go. And he's like, you're fine. Just do that. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. I did that for about 4 months. I lived in my car, 4 to 5 months wow. I lived in my car because it took a while for me to actually become permanent.
And that whole time you hadn't told anyone?
I hadn't told anyone. I would stay at work really late. It was so weird, Dale, because I'm in this city where I don't have my core friends and family there, like the people that really know me. And I'm like figuring out what street I can sleep on, where I can, you know what I mean? And like, you know, in the middle of the night, you have to get up and go to the bathroom. Like when you're in your car, that's very different. You're like, I'm in an alleyway. Is this safe? It's very different. You want to sleep with your windows down a little bit, but not too much that someone can put their hand in there. It's just a different headspace. And what's very interesting, Dale, is that I am more in shock looking back at how I got through that than actually being in the moment. I think I just have like this survivor type thing inside where I was like, I'm not leaving. I didn't come here to leave. Yeah. And I'm going to get through this. And it was really weird. I had nothing, but I felt like I had everything. And I guess I felt like I had everything because I was like, you have you. Because I couldn't rely on anyone else. I had me. And it was kind of a lesson in me proving to myself that having me by myself was enough. I didn't realize that at the time. In hindsight, looking back, I'm like, oh, that's why I felt some sort of comfort. I remember my mom calling and just being like, hey, how are you? And, you know, having conversations like normal. And I'm like, I'm in a car, but I'm great, yeah. Mom. How are you? You know, and so the pretending, and it was a very interesting time, very interesting time. That's how I started there.
You brought up before about some insecurity that you had, but from the stories that you're telling, A, turning down that record deal and sticking through this 4 month period where you were living in your car, it sounds like you had conviction. Mm-hmm. So at what point did you still have insecurity then? Like, was there a point in that 4 month period where you're like, fuck this, I'm packing up, I'm going back home to safety, to comfortability?
I don't know if insecurity has ever really left me, to be honest. I think what I'm learning is just how to manage it. I think that I'm learning that I can have insecurity, I can have fear and still push forward. I'm learning that I can be unsure, but I can rely and trust in myself. So my insecurity and the trust in myself is completely different. My insecurity rooted in, you know, as you start to get older, you start to kind of discover like things that may have been said to you from people at school. I mean, anything as a kid you absorb and you silently agree. You silently agree with someone else's idea of who you are. And I think for a while I had been wearing someone else's idea of myself. And it happened at a crucial time when I was also so unsure. So I just believed that and clung to it for so long that it became my truth. So someone else's idea of my lack became my own truth because I didn't even know myself enough to know. I think that I just have will. And I don't know how to really explain that any other way. I think that when I know I have to do something or my mind is made up, I'm going to do it. I'm going to figure it out. It's going to get done. And so I think that I was still insecure because I didn't feel secure. I didn't have a home. I didn't have friends. Right. I didn't have family. I have a temp job. I'm in a organization that is known around the world for excellence. And I wasn't a film head. I came from music and culture and art. And so I think that it wasn't my insecurity that I was able to, that was bothering me. I think it was just like my will to keep going because I did not come to leave was really kind of what took over. So I don't think my insecurities have plagued me in a way where it makes me not mobile, but insecurity is something that I think I will always have. And it allows me to be relatable to people because I never want to seem like I have it all together because I don't.
Right.
I'm figuring it out every day.
Yeah. We all live with it.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not all. There's certain, and but you can always tell the people that don't have the insecurity.
I think that
maybe you do need a dose of insecurity.
Yeah, I think that we all do live with it. It just doesn't affect us all the same way. Because we're all human, we all have the same, we know what joy feels like, we know what hurt feels like, we know what pain feels like, we know what sadness feels like. As a human, we have the full range to feel all those feelings. I think some people just don't water that flower enough for it to grow. But everyone feels unsure about something, you know, and I'm just open about mine.
So you've been at the Academy for a while. You were there when the Oscars So White fiasco, the attention that the Academy got from the nominations lacking diversity.
Yeah.
Can you shed some light on what was happening internally, especially coming from your perspective as a Black man working at the Academy and for an organization to be getting so much attention and getting scrutinized? What was happening within the organization and what was happening within you?
Well, I think what I think was just happening in front of the world was, speaking from my personal perspective, not necessarily from the Academy's vantage point, I think what was happening for the world was an opportunity masked in chaos, right? When April Rain sent that tweet out, I think that I've had a lot of conversations with her. She also didn't think that it was about to get this big exposure and become this big thing. No one did, right? And I think that it was an opportunity for not only the industry, but for the entire world to take a look at itself. Every company, whether you're in tech, whether you're in sports, whether you're in healthcare, to be like, are we healthcare so white? Are we, you know, sports so white? Are we whatever the case may be? And I think what was happening internally, which was what happening in front of the world, is everyone was just taking a look like, wait, yeah, what is going on here? You know, and not to say that there weren't thoughts that weren't permeating, whether you're watching your news and the anchor, you're like, why do they all look the same? There were thoughts about it, but I think this kind of drove it through. So I think it wasn't even really, even though it was focused on Oscar So White, I think it was World So White. And it was more like a opportunity for everyone to kind of look at what could happen if we were to have it actually representative of what the real world is. I would say what was happening inside, which was happening outside in the world, was like, there needs to be something that has really changed about this. And not that it wasn't thought about before, but that now the time and the intention has drawn. And I think that it was an opportunity.
So there was never a kind of a moment where you were like, fuck this, I'm leaving. It was more so, let's look at the opportunity that we have and let's move forward. Was there any kind of pushback with the organization or and the members, or was everyone like, yeah, let's fix this?
I think the entire world, well, so going back to saying fuck this, I think that it was just more or less like, I think as a Black man, I'm coming more into grips with my responsibility that I have wherever I am in the world, my responsibility and how I represent myself at the grocery store, at an award show, online. And I don't think that anyone living in today's time, especially when you're thinking of such an elite organization that's really known for excellence in terms of broadening the aperture of what film can be and broadening kind of how different voices are heard and seen. Pushback, no. I think that everyone is kind of just like, let's go forward for the industry, right? Because I'm talking about anyway from CAA to UTA to ICM to the big management houses, the PR houses. And I think that it was an industry wake up, if you will, and an opportunity to reset.
Yeah, awesome. So what was the actual opportunity for you within the Academy? Was that a part of this role that you currently hold? And can you kind of explain what you do day to day in the Academy?
Yeah, I think that for me specifically, it was an opportunity because I was an assistant at the time, which was such a great learning experience, right? I think that we don't talk a lot about service. Everyone wants a big title. Everyone wants a big position. But we often don't talk about how instrumental it is to learn and to really be at a seat where you can see amazing people having amazing change, and how that the idea of systemic change and how that actually comes into play. Because as a creative, I'm used to things being creative, and I didn't realize that you could be creative at work in those positions. So working behind and working with some of the smartest people who really think outside the box, for me, it was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. You know? So for me as a man and as a Black man, I was like, wow, something has to change here. And I started to think, what if you could be a part of that change? You know, I had been an assistant at that time for a couple of years, which allowed me to start to really understand the landscape, the direction, maybe the mission, and also build my own relationships. And when I started to be able to build my own relationships, I was like, oh, it's very different if I reach out to X talent and filmmaker than if you reach out to X talent and filmmaker, because maybe they see themselves in me differently. And we're having different conversations and I'm understanding maybe things in a different way. And how could that be applied to make this whole thing better, right? Because all I want to do is everything I approach, I want it to just be better, not for me, for other people, right? And so keeping that service mentality, I was like, I've been so fortunate to learn under the leadership. And I'm like, how can I be creative here? And I was like, you know what? It would be great. Like a position. It was just the perfect opportunity. Like I said, opportunity and chaos to be like, you need someone who can kind of help with the outreach and like what that actually is, and kind of everyone kind of helping me. And I'm like, I think it's me. Like, I think it's me. So I remember after the show, I went to New York. I went to go see Hamilton with my mom, because that's what you do. You go see a play. Yeah. And I went to this Hamilton with my mom, and I was so inspired. And I was like, wow, I really want to be a part of this amazing change that's happening in the world, in the industry. And what does that look like? So I like drew up a job description, literally like this 4-page proposal. I'm like, I can do this, and that. And we don't talk enough about promoting ourselves. And when I say promoting yourself, I mean promoting yourself mentally. Believing that you have the ability to, not that you're prepared to do it, but that you have the will and the humility to learn along the way. And I think that the humility to learn along the way, I was like, here's what I think could happen. I know I have a lot to learn, but here's a position that I think could work. And it was the perfect opportunity, because at that time they had hired someone in the membership. Her name is Lorenza Munoz, who's like an angel to me. And I came down with her and I was like, what do you think about this? I'm thinking about this position, and it would sit between blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And it would be able to help with all of the initiatives that I know are going to set to come into place. And it's an amazing team of amazing individuals who are doing a lot of work. And I was like, I really want to be a part of that. Because at that time I had thought, I think I had capped out on being an assistant. I learned what I needed to learn, and it was time to go to the next level. But you have to see that in yourself first. You have to promote yourself first. So mentally, I got myself there where I was like, I can do this. And then it was just about putting pen to paper. And then I remember her and I had talked about it, and she was like, I think this could be great. Positioned it to the CEO at the time and to HR, and they approved it. It allowed me to move. And the power that someone gives you when they say yes, you know, because they didn't have to say yes. It wasn't because was I the most qualified? Was I the most? No, but I have heart. I have humility enough to learn. And above all, I think that I'm service-minded. I'm so proud of not only the organization, but just proud of myself too, for just being able to see that in myself. Because you know how it is, Dale. Like, it's difficult when you're in a position to see yourself in a bigger position, because you feel like, well, this is all I am. Yeah. And so that idea of like talking yourself through your own fears and your insecurities to get on the other end of, I can do this, and I'm deserving as well. And I have something I want to give.
Yeah. We're so quick to discount ourselves.
Oh my God.
Why we can't do something versus why we can, or why we could achieve everything that we set our minds to.
And I think that I really hope more than anything that people just really can think about going into something from a service mentality. And I'm just going to stress that to the bone, because I feel like people want to be the leader, and the leader is great. The leader is great, but with the leader comes great responsibility. And with the servant and the service mentality, you're able to learn so that when your time comes to get to X space or to operate in this landscape, you have not only the trust of the person that you were working with and serving, but also the peers and everyone around you, but you also have the knowledge to know what you don't know, because that is very important. Know what you don't know so that you can ask to figure out how to make it all kind of really come together. But my job on that side at this moment is member relations and outreach. And what does that look like? You know, how are we engaging some of the new members working with that team to figure out like, what could that look like? Just ideas about like kind of how can we make things more relevant? You know, obviously with what's happening with George Floyd, unfortunately, what has happened with Breonna Taylor, with Ahmaud Arbery, what's happening in the world in terms of COVID. I think we're all wanting to have conversations that really touch the heart. I think we're all wanting to have content that speaks to and is reflective of the world.
Definitely. I love that. I love that advice of coming from a place of service. And no matter what role you have, even as a leader coming from a place of service, you're servicing someone, you're servicing some community. If you come from a place of service and helping someone, you're going to go a lot further. You're going to have a more successful business, especially for you know, a lot of the listeners here work in the social impact space. They are social entrepreneurs. So as a social entrepreneur and leader, and you're trying to champion whatever cause that you feel passionate about, you're servicing people.
Yeah. And I think there's, I think it's been a misconception just really in the world too, when we talk about power. I think that some people think that power comes from you're the president, you're the CEO, you have this really huge title. I think that power comes from your heart. You know, I think that power comes from what is your intention? So if your intention as the janitor is to make it the best that it can possibly be, that's beautiful. You know what I mean? If your intention as a president is to demoralize, that's not beautiful. So it's, to me, it's never been about the title. It's just the person. And so like for me, I feel that the power comes from my ability to want to relate and connect, and with the outcome being service minded, but also elevation. And I think that if we could switch the dynamic that the assistants out there, you have power. You have a lot of power.
Do you have advice for other people that could be in an organization, they want to see change within the organization, specifically around social issues? Do you have any advice on how anyone from any position could be able to push forward and affect change?
Yeah, I think that sometimes, first of all, change is not something that comes very easily for people, especially when we're talking about a new climate, we're talking about a new space, a new world that we're in. In terms of whether that's a social campaigning for Black Lives Matter, whether that is women's rights, whether that is Latinx, you know, whatever it is, change is very difficult. We've been watching since civil rights. We've watched change is not something that happens overnight. So I think that if you can approach it from the space of it's not going to happen tomorrow, but what part can you play? And I think that if you kind of pose things, I guess, questions like, what can we be doing to help? What can we be doing to elevate? If you're working at your organization or you're working at your place, and not to say that I'm a pro about this, but if you can lay it out as to why it's important and why it's reflective and how we're missing out on an opportunity to be a part of the change. I think to the core, people want to be part of something that is elevated. I think as humans, our natural instinct is to be a part of something that is soaring. And if you can just speak to the hearts and minds of people about this is happening and we have an opportunity here to be a part of it in a large way and to bring, and it's like your excitement about it, right? And also understanding they may not get it right away, but it's really about changing the hearts and minds first, about you believing in it and you just kind of asking questions. How can we be a part of this? What can we do? Yeah. It's not about it being your idea. You know, that's another thing I think when you're working in companies, you know, when you have an idea and you know it's yours and whoever needs to take the credit for it is fine, right? But did it get done? Because that's my thing. If it's about, if you're going into it with the service mentality and it's not about you anyway, you know that you were able to kind of create and talk about this, and this person is walking away with a baton, fine, who cares? But did the purpose and did the intention of the project that you were pushing get done? Are people being lifted? Are people being elevated? Are people feeling seen and heard? Yeah, so the credit is yours, but you give that to yourself, because the moment that you are relying on someone else's, Dale, right that I did this, tell me that I did this. And it's like, you know you did it. You know you did it. But the thing is, you didn't do it for you. And if you did it for you, it's not really in line with what is actually consistent and ever flowing. Service is ever flowing. It's a river. It's going to keep coming back around the bend, and it's going to be a waterfall. It's going to drop right back into you anyway. Allow that to happen on its own naturally.
Is there ever a time where you do have to kind of stand up and take some of that power and take some of that credit?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are certain conversations that I think you have at the dinner table and certain conversations that you have in a meeting, right? And so that's why it's so important, your friend circle, your tribe, the people that you can rally with at work, if it's about work, the people that see you and know you, where you can beat your own chest by yourself. But you beating your own chest is really, really about it got done. Not that I got it done. It got done. It happened. And so, yeah, I talk to myself all the time. I'm very open about this. I talk to myself all the time. I'm always telling myself, Sean, I love you, because I need to hear that from me. And I thought for a while I needed to hear it from everyone else. So what I do is the things that I desire to hear from other people, this is a life hack, people, the thing that I deserve or that I desire to hear from other people, I just start telling it to myself. And that forces me to stop relying on someone else to give me something to make me feel better. So for example, if I'm like, yo, Sean, you really put that project together, and I'm not hearing that at work, for example, I'm telling that to myself every moment of the day. When I have a quiet moment, I'm like, yeah, you did that. Yeah, you did that. Yo, that was you. You know you did that, right? And so I champion for myself and talk to myself in the deepest, most expansive way all the time. That allows me to not necessarily have to rely on the voices of other people. And I think it's also important that sometimes your ideas aren't for work. Sometimes your ideas are for you. And you are looking at your job, or you're looking at the current space like, oh my God, I'm working here at the Academy, or I'm working at this record label, and I can rely on this platform of this place. And it's like, yeah, but if you can't do it there, do it yourself. The reason we're on this podcast, because you're doing it yourself. And there were conversations that I was like, God, I wish I could do this and tie it into work some way. But I was like, you know what? I have the relationships with the people anyway. I'll just start using my Instagram Live to have conversations about things that I want to talk about. I'll start merging on my own the conversations with influential people about real issues and real topics on my own. And so I would just challenge whoever that if they have an idea that they want to do at work, it doesn't die there if they don't want to do it. You can still do it. You might have to do it yourself.
Yeah, you segued for me. I was actually going to bring up the space that you've created for yourself in your own space. And you have been doing this IGTV series with some big names, with Mahershala Ali, with Rita Wilson, with Jay Ellis, having these deep conversations with them on a range of topics. How did that start for you? Where did that originate? And what's the attention behind it?
Yeah. So the intention is to show, I think that sometimes people look at public figures like they're not necessarily human, and that they're not dealing with things just like you're doing. Because I feel like if the person on the couch heard Rita Wilson say something that they're also going through, there's an opportunity for that person on the couch to understand that you can be your own Rita Wilson. You can be your own Jay Ellis. You can be your own Mahershala. They're talented and they're beautiful, but so are you. And so what if you could see in yourself what you so desire that you see in other people? And so it's just for me, it was a mindset. And I'm fascinated by conversations like this, which is why I'm so hyped to talk to you today. I'm fascinated about behind the scenes of not what people do, but how they do it. Because I feel like it's like this unspoken like secret where it's like, I just got here and I did this, and then I just showed up here and I'm the president of such and such. And it's like, no, back it up. Let's talk about your specific story. How did you start doing this? Tell me about a time when you didn't feel like you could do it. Tell me about the opportunity. Tell me about the character you've had to have to not only get it, but to sustain it. I feel that sometimes we put things in a box, in a pretty bow, and it's like, you're this and that's all it is. And so I started having just very interesting conversations with artists, people that I love and respect on my own. And my first interview was with Cynthia Erivo. And I was like, yo, Cynthia, I just want to have a conversation about your life, about your journey. Yes, you were nominated twice for an Oscar for your role in Harriet in acting and music, which is history, by the way. But I want to talk about you. I just want to talk to you about your life, about your upbringing. And then something happened that shook me. And that was the shooting of Ahmaud Arbery. And the shooting of Ahmaud Arbery, like all of them before, Philando Castro, Trayvon Martin, the shooting of Ahmaud Arbery in specific, I just in broad daylight, I'm a person who runs all the time. Just the act of what it was so disturbing that I was like, wait a minute. It just sent me down a path of really wanting to understand like my basic rights on a local level, federal level, just understanding or my interest to really understand. Then I started thinking, how many people don't know what to do if they get pulled over? How many people, I get pulled over all the time driving to work because I work in Beverly Hills all the time. And there's this fear around the police and around all of that. But what is the education that I need to know to start to feel safe? And I called attorney Ben Crump, who ignorantly, I didn't even know at the time that he was the attorney for Ahmaud Arbery. I was just calling him. No, I didn't even know. Again, I was just literally calling him because, again, the intention behind it was education.
Yeah.
How can we have a conversation that people can understand the severity of what's happening in the world, the history of what's been happening in the world, and so how we can continue to start moving in a direction of peace and healing, and also what we need to be doing on a local and federal level, because we can be angry, we can protest, but we can also show up and vote too. That's also very important.
Yep.
And with the social outcry that was happening on Instagram and all of the different social outlets, I wanted to know, like, does that help you? Does that help you in your case? What can we do? Because I see pictures and posts and I'm like, is that helpful? Is it working? Is him going viral making anything make sense? And that conversation moved me. And that was when I was like, okay, I want to talk to everyone. I don't necessarily need to talk to artists all the time. I then spoke to President Derek Johnson of NAACP about just kind of what we can do with our collective power, the inception of NAACP, the intention behind NAACP. How can we all come together and rally around what this is? What do we need to know and learn about our history? I mean, these were conversations that, like I said, if I were relying on any company wherever I worked, there would be levels of approval, right? But this is my Instagram. So yeah. I can just have whatever conversation that I want to have on my Instagram about things that I want to talk about. Mahershala, I know you were nominated in one for Moonlight. I know you were nominated in one for Green Book. I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about your life. I want to talk about the character, your failures, your fears. So it just prompted me and inspired me that I wanted to start having real conversations in a time, again, finding opportunity in chaos.
Yeah, I love it. And it's incredible work that you're doing, not just the interview series that you do, but I'm going to obviously link to your Instagram. But listeners, go follow Sean if you need a pep talk every single day. He is dropping truth bombs every single day. So I highly encourage you to follow him on Instagram. My question is, I've got so many questions specifically around this, especially now, and people are told, especially the youth coming up, to use your voice, you know, and yes. We have the platforms to be able to do that. You know, you can go start your own podcast, you can go onto your IGTV and create all this. And for someone like you, that you've obviously found your voice, it's authentic, you're confident. What about for those people that are struggling with that? They haven't used their voice before. Do you have any tips on how to start doing that?
Well, so I have a multi-layered answer. I'll first start by, in my conversation that I did with Rita Wilson, and I specifically asked her a question about her voice. Like, when did she start to realize? And she's like, she said something that really resonated with me. She said, you always know. You always know what you want. Deep down inside, you know what it is you want to do. What we've learned along the way is it's not possible. You're too tall. You're too short. You're too this. You're too that. You're not pretty enough. You're too pretty. You know, we learn all these ideas that we agree with. And I think that the first thing is, like, you know what you want to say. You yeah. know deep down inside what you want to say. And you know deep down inside what you're not saying and how that affects you when you don't. I also think that when we're talking about, you said, oh, I give you a pep talk or on my Instagram, which is fascinating because a lot of that I'm talking to myself, right? So again, like I told you, I'm talking to myself throughout the day. some that don't make it online, but talking to myself throughout the day. And what that does for me is that it builds my confidence where it really belongs and deserves, which is inside of me. My confidence, I'm realizing, never needed to be built on the opinions and on the backs of other people. It always needed to be built inside of me. So I've been taking the time to build my confidence inside of me so that when I do then start to use my voice, I feel rooted in using my voice because I've convinced myself that my voice matters. I would say number three, that I realized that my vulnerability was actually my power. And as an adult, I've been unlearning a lot. We learn as men who we need to be, how we need to feel emotionally or non-emotionally. We learn how to act, walk, talk. And I just started to redefine for myself, what is love for me? You know, what is self-love for me? What is respect for me? How do I want to leave people feeling? And I wanted to be an example, again, going back to imagery, I want to be an example of, you can be your whole self. You can be your whole self. I have talked online about eating disorders, my eating disorder, depression. And it's funny because I would start to get calls from people like, I can't believe you said that out loud. And it's like, but I've been doing the work on the inside that by the time you've heard it, I'm ready to release it. And because I know what that would have done for me if I was scrolling and saw somebody who looked like they had it all together and was like talking about something that actually impacted me, it would have inspired me. It would have lifted me. It would have elevated me. It would have encouraged me. So I started to realize that the things that I thought I needed to be ashamed of was actually the thing that I needed to speak up about, not only for me, but so that anyone who encounters me would feel like, oh, it's normal. I'm doing quotation marks so those people can't see. It's normal to not feel good about yourself. It's okay to be like, I'm actually not sure where my life is going and it's scaring me or terrifying me or giving me anxiety. And I want to normalize specifically on social because I think that there's so much beautiful things, people. I'm on a yacht, I'm on vacation, and I'm on this, but maybe they're not telling you that they're also behind on their credit card payments because of them going on that trip. And I'm not saying that everybody needs to do that, but for me, I started to realize that my vulnerability was actually my power. And I feel so comfortable because at least I know I'm being myself. I never want someone, I don't want an applause from anyone for being a shell of who I actually am. And I don't actually need the applause from anyone because I'm applauding myself on the inside. Yes, it feels good for people to say, I like that. It feels great as an artist and as a creative and as whatever. Our entire job is built around how people view you. But I've gotten to a place where I like me. And because I like me, my foundation is like and love for myself. So when someone else doesn't agree, I'm not like, oh my God, I'm nothing. I'm just kind of like, that's cool. I get it.
Yeah. What I hear is like this theme coming back up of service, right?
Yeah.
Here again, you servicing yourself and also being open with that online, you're also helping service other people that may not be in the best headspace because you're being vulnerable and because you're leaning into that.
Yeah. And I just feel like, you know, it's kind of like you did, which is why I said before we started recording how proud I am of you for this. We talked about these ideas and these concepts, and your core intention behind doing all of this is to share messages, to share conversations, to share stories with other people so that they also can feel heard. And I think that if we continue to do that, that's our purpose as humans, right? And we all do it differently. Everybody's not going to have a podcast. Everybody's not going to be on Instagram talking about their feelings, but find your way and be okay with incrementally growing what that is. It's not about 5 million people listening to it tomorrow. One person heard it and their life has changed. And think about if that one person becomes the president of the United States, how many people their life can change, or the CEO of a company, you know, and that's really what it is for me.
Yeah, totally. You can't focus on the numbers too much. Focus on why you're doing this, you know, and working on the cause that you care about or servicing whoever you want to service. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you'd like to touch on?
The only thing that I would like to touch on is just not being afraid to do the work. You know, I think that because we're in an age where everything is a picture, everything is an image, and we're judged on how beautiful that image is, what really is going to sustain you regardless of what it is that you're doing is the work that you're doing on yourself. And I think that anything people see on the outside of all of the people they admire, whether it's Beyonce, Jay-Z, you know, whoever it is that you're admiring, what you're seeing is their work, their internal work on themselves. And you're seeing them convince themselves every day that they deserve to be here. And that I think that if we could just do more of normalizing and bringing those people down to a, not bringing them down, but bringing them into a more focused space. Like, that's me too. You are that person. You also can evoke your own version of what that is. And I think that if we can do that as people doing the work and focus more on not really measuring where we are based on a numerical value. It's a, if you go on someone's Instagram page and you're just scrolling, you're like, wow, they have 5 million followers. And you go to someone's page and you're like, they only have 100. Just this idea of a numerical value that is your own value, I think is not really conducive, nor is it healthy. So I would just say, if you're listening to this podcast, this is part of the work, and find out how, where you are right now, not where you want to be, but how, where you are right now, how are you implementing service? That's my question. How are you implementing service? How are you elevating the space around you? And how are you loving on yourself?
Yeah. And then do it.
And then do it. And then repeat.
Sean, you're a champion, my man. I appreciate you. I appreciate your voice. Thank you so much for coming on this show. And I look forward to everything you have in store in the future.
I'm excited. I have some things coming. I'm excited. But Dale, thank you. Thank you again. And for everyone listening, thank you for just taking the time. And I wish you love, light, and flourishing.
Isn't Sean incredible? Every time I get the chance to speak with him, I'm always left so motivated and inspired. His message to love yourself first is so on point. Those words of love and encouragement that you're looking for from others, start saying them to yourself. Fill your own cup. Everything else you get is bonus. And I love his advice to always come from a place of service. Always be thinking, how can I help in this moment? What can I do that will serve humanity? Go follow Sean on Instagram. Let him know what resonated with you from this episode. His handle is Sean Finney B Flourishing. I have his Instagram link in the show notes. That's it. Thanks for listening and showing up and being you.